Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Holtcast, talking all things Aston Villa after a 2-2 draw at Villa Park against Chelsea, a game that went slightly awry as proceedings went on in that second half. The more eagle-eared of our listeners will have noticed that this is not Cole Petham. Cole is otherwise indisposed today, so you've got me, Tom Nightingale, as your host today. I'm here with Simon O'Regan to talk all things Villa-Chelsea. I guess the best place to start, we'll dive into the game, obviously. But I mean, as far as weeks and sort of week-long periods and 2-week-long periods go for Villa, not too bad at all, eh, Si?
It's been brilliant, really, hasn't it? I think, you know, the fact that we'll be going into May sitting in fourth, 7 points clear of the team behind us in fifth, with a semi-final of the European Cup competition to look forward to. I mean, in all my time sort of going to Villa, which, you know, has been referenced quite often in this podcast as a long, long time, I honestly don't know if he's ever been as good as this in, you know, the last 25 years that I've been going.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not for me. Like, my first season paying sort of what I'd call like full attention to Villa, when you're able to sort of know what you're watching, do you know what I mean, was 2001, I think, actually, was my first proper one. So, I mean, for me, like, there is no doubt about the fact, like, this is the best Villa season that I have ever, you know, personally witnessed. To have sealed a top five, I mean, you stole my next line, really. I was going to say the same thing about heading into May and the position we're in. Like, to have sealed our first top five finish in 27 years with four games to go? It was three games to go.
Yeah, pre-kickoff with the Man U tour. Yeah, it was.
You know, I distinctly remember us being on this podcast, I guess it must have been last summer, like pre-season. And we were talking about balancing Europe, right? Balancing Europe and the Premier League. And I think we kind of came to a consensus between us. I think it was me, you, Seb, Cole. I think we came to a consensus between us that it was basically either top six or a deep European run was what we were kind of shooting for this year. Certainly, I never thought that we would be able to do both the way that we've done both this year. So, I mean, I think that as much as we'll get on to the Chelsea game and the disappointment of letting a lead slip, like, I just encourage all Villa fans to sit back and reflect on where we are at the moment, because it is ridiculous times. I guess we'll dive into the game. It's a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? I sort of came away from that not really knowing how to feel about it. Obviously, you never like to let a 2-goal lead slip, but I thought 2-0 up flattered us massively, to be honest. I guess the easiest way to sort of summarize the game is that we just let Chelsea play keep ball for 90 minutes and sort of dared them to play through us, right? And tried to hit them on the counter-attack in transition. Rode our luck and it worked for a while and then sort of all came crashing down a little bit. I mean, as succinctly as you can after a game like that, I mean, what did you make of it, Si?
I thought it was a strange sort of game plan that we adopted. And I kind of, it clearly didn't work because we let the lead slip. But I agree, I thought we'd done very well to go in at halftime 2-0 up. You know, I thought we started the game, you know, the first 5 minutes really, really well on the front foot, obviously got the lead. And I expected us to really kick on from there. And for the second time at Villa Park against Chelsea this season, I felt like we afforded them far too much respect that a team of their ability should have been given. Like, it was almost like how I'd expect us to have played against Chelsea in the, you know, 15 to 20 year period under Roman Abramovich, when they were a brilliant, brilliant football team full of world-class footballers. They're not that anymore. And I was surprised. I mean, I know that sometimes that is kind of how we'll play, that we'll let them have the ball sort of in their own half and let them advance so far. But normally there's, even when they've, you know, the opposition teams have the ball in those sort of positions, we will still apply some level of pressure on them. And certainly once they get towards our final thirds, then you would expect us to really engage. But I just thought we sat off them way too much and were far too passive. And, you know, in the first half, I think we were quite lucky that, in a way, that Chelsea had clearly decided before the game that all their opportunities had to be taken either by Mudryk or Nicholas Jackson, who, I mean, that Mudryk, I honestly think he's, in terms of like pound for pound signings, probably the worst signing in Premier League history. Like, I maintain the first time he actually saw football was his first day at Chelsea, and they haven't let him train with one since, because I think he's shocking. And then Jackson, you know, the header off the post, how he's managed to do that, I'll never know. So I think we got away with it going in at half time 2-0 up. And I we were sort of chatting at half time, me and my mates, and we were, you know, sort of, you know, saying what we just said then, and you're just thinking, like, if you come out and really start fast in the next 5-10 minutes of the second half, and if you can get a third goal, they will fold, because they've got nothing to play. You saw what happened to them midweek against Arsenal. I was disappointed. I actually thought it was one of the poorer performances that we've put in all season. But at the end of the day, we did come away with a point. And I think, I mean, we'll go into this, I'm sure, a bit later on, but when we're sort of talking about where we see us finishing the battle between us and Tottenham for the top four. But one of the things I think we've had all season that has set us apart from, yeah, you know, certainly Tottenham and Man U, you know, for a period of time when they were in the hunt for top four, is that, you know, you're never going to be perfect in every game of the season, unless you're Man City, pretty much. But what we've managed to do this season is there's been a number of occasions where we've not played particularly well, but we've still either got a point or even won the game. Whereas you look at the likes of Tottenham, like when they play badly, they are bad, and they normally get a good turning over, whereas we don't seem to have that about. We've got a bit more steeliness and character to our team. So I think that, I think yesterday was an example of that. We didn't really play well. I think a year or two ago, we go and lose that game. But we you know, we managed to get a point and keep ticking over. But overall feelings is I thought that was a poor performance and an unexpected one for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, really. Like, you're talking about the fast start, get a bit of a lucky break, obviously, with the ball deflecting in off Cucurella. But like, the way we started that game reminded me quite vividly of the Arsenal game at home, right? When McGinn scores, I think, something like 7 minutes in, because we come flying out. And okay, we don't build on that lead in that game, but we manage the game just sensationally from that point on in that Arsenal win. Pretty much the exact opposite happened, I felt, really, on Saturday. I really agree with you, your point about affording them too much respect. Like, at the end of the day, you are, okay, like, Cole Palmer's a dangerous player and Chelsea's still a bit of a flashy name, but you're ostensibly playing a mid-table club at home and you're 1-0 up after 5 minutes or whatever. Like, it was very disappointing to me that we weren't able to convert that into not even just a win, but like a positive front foot performance. I thought it was weirdly flat. And I think you're right as well, that like the way that we approached the game, you said, surprised you. Same with me, really, as well. But I mean, a few things, we'll whistle through it, the game, but like a few things that really sort of ground my gears while I was watching was, you know, not only not being able to convert like a 2-0 lead into a win, but, you know, we a lot of Villa fans, understandably, were harping on about that period after half time, right? 45 to 60 minutes where I think we concede one of the higher goal totals in the league in that period, where it seemed to have something about us where we can't come out as strong at the start of the second half as we would really like to. Annoying for me is that we navigated that period. You know, 2-0 up at halftime, we got through that. And then I think it was 62, 63 minutes we let that first goal in from Madueke. I mean, it's a nice finish, but it's one of the things, you know, both of the goals that we conceded felt so avoidable to me. You know, Gallagher, it's a, as well, top, you know, top bins. It's a great strike, but how much time are you affording him on the edge of the box? Like, there's no urgency to close down at all. Obviously, the first one, Dougie Louise getting caught on the ball, doesn't happen very often. You know, you don't, there's no need to dig him out over something like that. Those things do happen, but, you know, it's just, we never really felt like we never had a real handle on the game, and we certainly didn't manage it the way that I think what's most surprising is the way that we've come to expect from Unai Emery's Villa is we are pretty good most of the time in managing those situations. So
yeah,
another, something I thought as well, another factor, obviously, we had Youri Tielemans go off. We're going to wait for news on him. But I mean, that lost us a certain amount of, I mean, we didn't really have midfield control, but it definitely lessened our ability to wrestle, you know, possession in the game from Chelsea, I felt. Obviously, Emi Martinez going off and Robin Olsen coming on. Something we've got to talk about, I think. Olsen, you can argue, you know, would Emi Martinez have saved one or both of those goals? I think that's being very harsh to Robin Olsen. I don't think he's come up with that massive stop, hasn't he, at the end from Cole Palmer.
Yeah.
That's preserved the point. But I mean, I'd be interested to get your opinion on, because one thing I do feel is while Olsen coming in for Martinez didn't directly, you know, cost us the win or anything like that, I do just get a nagging feeling that we just look less sure of ourselves without Emi Martinez in goal. I mean, it's obvious, right? He's the world's best goalkeeper. Of course you do.
Yeah.
But I just felt that really impeded us a little bit because you don't have, I feel like it's very obvious a lot of the time that like Ezri Konsa, Pau Torres have a huge amount of faith in having Emi Martinez behind them. You know, what are your thoughts on that? I felt like it maybe slightly sort of unbalanced us a little bit in the second half, or do you think I'm being too harsh?
No, I think you're right. I think the last two games that they've had now, obviously the second half and then the Man City away game, I think in those games, in neither of those games, I don't think you can say that he made a big catastrophic mistake. And in fact, in both games, he actually, you know, pulled out some decent saves. But I think because certainly in quite a number of his earlier appearances, like he has made some really, really poor errors. And I think what's happened is like there's not a fan that feels comfortable when he's on the pitch. And, you know, whether that's right or wrong, sometimes you can't help it because you've seen him make so many errors. I think when everyone saw him come on at half time, I think there's just a collective feeling of nervousness because you know that he has got kind of ricks in him. And I think that has to sort of transcend onto the pitch as well. And like even like the first goal, there's a number of players that are culpable for it. You know, obviously Louise gets caught in possession. But it all come that all stemmed from, I think there's the cross into the box, Olsen comes and claims it. If that's Martinez, you know, he's dropping on that ball, he's taking a bit of time, let's the outfield players all get settled and into position. But Olsen, as soon as he got it, he rolls it quickly out to Matty Cash. And there's no out ball for Cash, and he has to cut in, play it across the pitch, I think, to Torres, and then we get ourselves pinned back in the corner. And Like you say, we navigated that sort of tricky 15-minute period. So then you've got through that bit. So you're at the stage then when you need to start, like you've said, managing the game, just taking time out. And it's, you know, I'm not saying then that first goal is directly Robin Olsen's fault, but the fact that he, you know, rolls out so quickly when we're not really set up to actually deal with that, these little things like that, you know, Martinez just wouldn't have done. And I've seen seen a number of people. I saw there was a lot of people online after the game, you know, just absolutely slating Olsen. I don't think, like, you can't blame him for that, because I thought the whole team were poor for pretty much the entire game. So it was a collective thing. And, like, a lot of the argument has been whoever comes in, you know, instead of Martinez, he's not going to be as good, which is obviously, because Martinez is the best keeper in the world. But I don't think that means that you should therefore accept that the drop-off has to be as big as I think it is. And, I mean, obviously, we brought in Joe Gauch in January. I'd probably fully expect him then to be the number two for next season. But yeah, it's one of those. I don't think he did anything wrong in particular, but it's just, you can tell the crowd feel nervous, and I think the players, there must be an element of that you know, transcends to the players as well. And yeah, I think it'd be wrong to say that if Martinez is playing in that second half, it would have been any different, because I'm not sure exactly. No, I think there's every chance we probably still wouldn't have picked up 3 points. But like I say, that first goal, I don't think that situation develops, because Martinez would just shit out there and just, you know, he'd take a good 20, 30 seconds out of the game. So yeah, it's, I'm not a fan. I've said a few times, you know, on this podcast in the past, that I don't particularly rate him. I don't think you can blame him for yesterday, but it doesn't. Yeah, it's a difficult one, because I don't like to dig out players. You know, I like to think that myself and all of us on here are quite level-headed, and, you know, understands that, you know, not everyone's going to be great at times, but it just, you do feel nervous, and it's easier said than done. But I really hope on Thursday nights there's not that, because he's going to be playing on Thursday. I think Martinez is banned. So, you know, we're going to, I don't think the crowd will need to try and really write as much positivity as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult, because, like, with the truth with Olsen is that I don't really, part of me feels like I don't really feel like any problem with Robin Olsen is actually a Robin Olsen problem. I sort of feel like it's an Emi Martinez problem, because Olsen's not going to set the world alight as a goalkeeper or whatever, but I think that the vast majority of Premier League teams would consider him to be a pretty solid B-plus backup goalkeeper. It's just that we haven't like an A-star, you know, we have the best goalkeeper in the world. So that drop-off in quality is always going to be tough to deal with whenever that happens. And a big thing as well for me as well is that, like, part of Martinez's value for us isn't only his shot-stopping ability, it's that the whole way that we play as a team is built with having him as, you know, the foundational stone in goal. It's not just the shot stopping. It's, like you say, it's the playing out from the back, everything from selecting the right option to, your point, like, timing the right option. You know, it's that. And obviously with Martinez, A, he's really good at it. And B, he plays every week. He knows his defense inside out. Even little things like the shithousery, right? And the time wasting and the game management, like, it's easy to gloss over, I think, how valuable those things are that Martinez adds in goal. And so that's another thing that whenever you take him out, whether it's Robin Olsen or it's somebody else, to be honest, whoever it is who's coming in to replace Martinez, you lose probably 80% of those factors, I think. On the topic of, just while we're talking Robin Olsen, I'll jump around. I don't know if Cole will hate me for this, probably, but we did.
I mean, let's be honest, Tom. Is there any ever structure to this podcast?
There is. That's true. There is not. At the best of times, we are wayward, to say the least. And this is me hosting for the first time at about an hour's notice. So I'm making the best of a bad job on my end. But I thought it was interesting, as we're talking about Robin Olsen, you know, we like to put out our Twitter polls every week. Three questions for our followers on Twitter to. Should I be calling it X now? I'm not calling it X. And one of the questions we put out actually this week was, you know, like we've mentioned about Emi Martinez suspended for the first leg against Olympiacos on May. So we, on Thursday. So we put out the question, you know, who would you prefer to see starting goal? You know, do you think Robin, do our followers think Robin Olsen comes in by default, or do we think there's even a slight chance that Joe Gauchy steps in? I mean, I know my answer, and 82% of respondents to that said Robin Olsen comes in, and we had 18%, which to me is quite high. I gotta be honest. Like 18% said they think Joe Gauchy should get a shot. Like, my opinion is that, you know, there's a time and a place to throw players in. And I do not think that throwing your third choice goalkeeper in the first leg of a European semi-final is something that even merits discussion at all, to be honest. But I mean, is that just me? Or
I mean, I would be inclined to agree that it'll be a hell of a gamble.
It'd be a ballsy move, wouldn't it?
it would, but then, you know, to be fair, when we won the European Cup in 1982, young Nigel Spink had to come on very early on in that game to make his debut. But yeah, I mean, like that you take that as a complete one-off, and obviously Spink went on to be a great goalkeeper for us. But you can't, like, you absolutely cannot chuck Gauchy, because if you did, and, you know, say if you did and he didn't make a, you know, really bad mistake or something, what are you doing then to the rest of his Villa career?
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. Mean?
Like, you can't do that sort of that. The one thing I would say is I'm surprised that we didn't actually send him out on loan then, when we signed him in January. I kind of wonder what the thinking was with that, because part of you might think, you know, get him a bit of experience of playing English football. But then the fact they didn't probably strengthens sort of what I was saying earlier, that I fully expect him to be the second choice next year, because you're thinking, no, let's keep him at the club, give him a solid 6-month training so he knows exactly what he's expected.
Yeah,
you know, from a last of it, a goalkeeper, but no, you can't chuck him in there. It'll be the lads would have to have some bloody personality about him to want to do that. But it's not going to happen anyway.
I agreed on all counts, really. Like, I definitely think that he's number two next year. I would think, you know, without having, you know, I haven't seen him play, you know, but like. Yeah. It's that classic thing, and this is actually going to be quite a good segue to what I want to talk about next, but it's that classic thing of if Unai Emery thinks that he is the man to come in and be a backup and, you know, maybe even a long-term successor in goal, like, who are we as fans to argue against, you know, the Sultan of Unai?
Oh, people will, though.
Oh, well, that's very true. On that topic, let's have a little bit of love for Morgan Rodgers again, shall we? Because I, like, you know, Villa... To that point about Unai Emery, you got to trust Emery, you got to trust Monchi, you got to trust the system of, you know, discovering these players. I mean, 8 million rising to 15 million. You know, Villa have gone thrift shopping and they found a gem, right? They've gone digging in the dirt and they found a diamond. Like, this lad is big, he's strong, he's technically gifted, he can pass, he can finish, he can run with the ball. Like, you know, it's a small sample size still. And I do think his path into playing first team football for us has been smoothed on his end by the injury crisis. You know, if Jacob Ramsey is fit, I'm not sure we're having this conversation right now. But, you know, there's taking chances with both hands, and then there's doing what Morgan Rodgers has done. Because, like, I thought we might get a couple of neat cameos from him. Never in a million years did I think that he would be having this kind of impact. And he looks so at home, you know, with like Douglas Luiz and Ollie Watkins and Leon Bailey. And, you know, he looks so at home amongst these players. And so, you know, there's however many games there are left now, 5, 6, if we get to the final, I think, you know, he's bound to get a lot more game time. But for me as well, it's not only that, it's, you know, if this is what he's like after, what, 3 months,
yeah.
Imagine what full preseason under Emery is going to do for him, and how this lad can kick on. I mean, what are your thoughts on, you know, first few months of Morgan Rodgers, and, you know, the ceiling that maybe you think this guy has?
I mean, to go to like your starting point there in terms of you know, just trust Emery. I remember in January when we were signing him, a lot of unhappy Villa fans.
I remember, you know, it well.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted something else at the time, something along the lines of, you know, if he's good enough for Emery, he should be good enough for all of us. And have people not learned their lesson from the Alex Moreno meltdown that we'd had the previous January when people were freaking out about spending, what was it, 9 or 10 million, around the 10 million mark, yeah, on a 29-year-old fullback. You know, I mean, first of all, when did 29 become, you know, old for a footballer? But that's a complete other debate. But, you know, he came in and January last year and completely transformed the way that Villa attacked for the second half of that season, was instrumental. I think it's just a shame that he's been, like so many players, so hampered with injury this season that, you know, he's kind of knackered him for this year. But like I say, I thought people might have learned their lesson when we were signing Rodgers. You know, the fee, 8 million potentially rising to 15. Again, people, you know, really losing their minds about what is a very small amount of money for Premier League footballer nowadays. And like yourself, I don't, there's no way that he was signed with the thought process of playing as much football as he has this season. You know, it's the injury to Ramsey and, you know, Zaniolo kind of being in and out of form and injury as well has kind of forced the hands to play Rodgers. But the fact is, he's, like you say, he's grabbed that chance with both hands and he's getting better and better each week. I think the other week, me and Cole were doing the pod and we were talking about him. And I said then that even in his first couple of appearances, there's still definitely elements of the game, of his game, that there's a lot of improving to do, you know, specifically kind of the defensive side of it. But that will come with, you know, time. He's still only 21. But even those early appearances, you could see, okay, there's, you know, he's got a bit about him. He takes some nice positions. And you're kind of, after the first few sort of appearances, I sort of think he just needs a goal, I think, just to settle him. So a couple of times where sort of the wrong decision being made, and, you know, when he got into the final third, I think a big sort of turning point was the performance against Wolves, when I think that was the first time I think a lot of people really noticed that running power through the middle. You know, it took basically rugby tackles to stop him. And even then, he was brushing a lot of them off.
He looked like Terminator out there.
he's ridiculous. But like you say, it's the size of him as well. You know, he's a big unit. But he uses his frame well as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's clever with it. He knows when to sort of get physical with the players. And what I've been really impressed with is the technical ability that you mentioned. You know, his first touch, he gets himself into really clever pockets of space, and he can turn either way with the first touch as well. And once he's gone past someone, the only way to stop him is to foul him, really. And you know, we've mentioned a couple of times as well, it's been quite handy having someone like that, because we've not had Ramsey's running power, you know, all season, really. Yeah. So we've got someone replicating that. In terms of his ceiling, I think we could have a really, really special player on our hands here, because he's already shown, you know, so much already, a lot more than I think anyone had any right to expect from him. And like you say, with a full pre-season under his belt as well, And hopefully, you know, next season, you know, hopefully, obviously, Ramsey and Buendia will be fully fit. You know, you don't know who might be coming in, who might be going out. But next season, obviously, he's playing himself into a position where he's starting because he deserves it. But this is also still his first 6 months of Premier League football. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of, I think Emery is obviously such an elite level manager that he'll know himself as well that Rodgers is unlikely to be able to produce that week in, week out next season, unless he is the, you know, this kind of special player that maybe Emery has kind of seen, you know, things that he is. But you can, hopefully next year we'll have a much more fitter, bigger squad that you can take him out at times, because there'll be times where he will need to be sort of taken out and given a break. And, you know, you look like, say, obviously, I'm not saying this is a direct comparison, but you look at how Guardiola has managed Foden over the last few years. It's only really this season that Foden has played very, very regularly. You know, the last couple of years, he'll get a good run of games, and then he'll get taken out for a bit, and you get all these experts in the Sky studios and whatnot saying he should be playing week in, week out. You know, these are elite level managers. They know what they're doing. Just let them get on with it. But just on back to Morgan Rodgers, I think he's been excellent. And I'm really excited to see how much further he can develop.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, that's the thing as well, right? Is that, you know, Villa, we've signed plenty of talented players in recent years, you know, since coming back up. But I think the difference, with no disrespect meant to Dean Smith, and quite a lot of disrespect meant to Steven Gerrard, like, but in previously we've had managers who you might our scouting team, you know, might pluck a gem from somewhere, but then you get the feeling that a lot of how well they perform is kind of luck or it's circumstantial or whatever. Whereas like with under Emery, there genuinely aren't many. I mean, there aren't many managers I'd want, you know, over Emery in any capacity. But one of those factors is definitely his player development and player management. Like unearthing a diamond and finding a talented player is one thing. Actually knowing how to kind of like sculpt them and care for them over time, to your point about Guardiola, is another thing entirely. And we've got one of, as far as I'm concerned, we've got one of the very best managers in the game for that. So
On that as well, then I think that shows as well just how vitally important it's been that Emery's basically been able to bring in everything, you know, whoever he wants within, you know, that scouting network. You know, Monchi obviously coming in, someone he's worked with before. Because, you know, say if you just looked at, you know, the basic stats of Rodgers in the first half of the season at Middlesbrough, you know, most people probably look at him and go, oh, okay, he's, you know, an all right ish young player. Yeah. But clearly, because the sort of framework that we've got at the club now, that, you know, Emery's got everyone that he wants in, you know, people that he's worked for years who he trusts. You can, for me, this is a perfect example of where they've seen this player and, you know, rather than being like a YouTuber now and just basing everything purely on stats as if they're the only thing that matters, they've clearly seen the qualities that Rodgers has and have basically gone, okay, this player has everything that you need and that you want and that you'll be able to develop, even though he's got them there. And, you know, when you look at the success, especially if you look at the success at Sevilla when with Emery and Monchi, a lot of that was built on unearthing these sort of gems, as you say, you know, Dani Alves, I see Croatian midfielder,
Rakitic,
yeah. No, they went and got a lot of young players who they knew, okay, we know what we're going to do with these. And you kind of, you look back at this, you know, Jamie Windsor just gone, obviously we've got Gauci in, but Rodgers, and then you had Nedeljkovic and Sousa, who have obviously both been sent out on loan. So it'd be interesting. I'm quite interested to see what will happen, because without going off on a tangent on FFP and stuff like that, you know, everyone knows that, you know, a lot of Premier League clubs are going to have to be a bit careful this summer. If you've got yourself a network where you don't have to spend huge amounts of money to get players in that you can develop. And Emery's shown, not just with Rodgers, but basically every single player in that squad, that he can improve them all. It's a very clever and effective way of you know, getting yourself a team to compete at the top level without having to break the bank to do so.
Yeah, I mean, it's what big, successful and sustainable clubs do well, isn't it? Create that framework and that infrastructure. And it's all this sort of stuff. I'm not going to give this any more lip service than this, but it's why that talk, don't even get me started on the Emery to United rumor. I saw Emery to like Bayern as well, all this sort of stuff. You know, when's he going to leave for a big club? Absolute ignorance. From outside Villa circles. Like, they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. They think he's a manager at a club. He's a gun for hire. He's going to jump to a bigger position. Like, any Villa fan, you know, worth their salt, just will have just dismissed that out of hand. Because, you know, the phrase I used, I think, when we appointed Emery, because, you know, I was ecstatic because I thought he's about the best quality of manager we could hope to attract.
To be honest, I think he was above the level of manager we should have been getting at that point.
I mean, at that point, yeah. But, you know, I think the phrase I used at that point was like, give him the keys, right? If you're going to bring in a big name manager like that, and someone like Emery is like a project manager who's got track record of all this sort of stuff, like, just give him the keys to the club and let him do it. And like the way that Villa have rallied around Emery and built that infrastructure for him, yeah, I think you're right. It's going to serve us very well. I mean, we could talk about Unai. We could talk about Unai for hours. One thing I did want to move on to, though, is obviously we are heading into, I mean, it just doesn't stop, does it? Well, my main complaint about this season at the moment is that it's going by too quickly. You know, I want to be able to savour it and enjoy it. Best season I've ever known as a Villa fan. But it's like, we're recording this on a Sunday night. And it's bloody hell, it's European semi-final on Thursday. So, I mean, we'll get into that a little bit. But I also, just before we leave the league, you know, the Chelsea game, you know, disappointing not to close it out, but to your point earlier, like, didn't lose, right? If you can't win, don't lose. And the way they dug in and got that point, now, recording this on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, suddenly looks a lot more valuable, doesn't it? After what happened in North London on Sunday. I mean, I was looking through it earlier because I was thinking, the gap with Spurs is sort of, you know, I was thinking after the Chelsea game, the gap with Spurs is actually bigger than I sort of realised it was. I look back and, you know, we drew 3-3 with Brentford, I think, on April 6th. And at that point, I believe we were three points ahead of Spurs, and they had 2 games in hand on us. Over the last couple, literally just the last 2 weeks since April 13th, Villa have gained 7 points on Spurs because Villa have put together, you know, back to back wins. Arsenal, help me out.
Bournemouth.
And then the draw with Chelsea. And in that time, you know, Spurs had a week where they didn't play a league game, but Spurs have got back to back defeats. And, you know, the Arsenal win was obviously, I mean, a high point of the season. There's no denying that, right? To go there and to pull off that win. Complete the double over Arsenal. The Brentford game, I thought we were absolutely scintillating in the second half. You know, Ollie Watkins had one of the games of his life, like that sort of, you know. We weren't anywhere near as good against Chelsea, as we've discussed already, but we dug in and we got that point out. And we keep, whether it's been Man United, you know, weeks ago, I mean, they've been dead and buried for a while now. You know, I stopped worrying about them in March, but it was Man United a few weeks ago. Now it's Spurs. We've got this fantastic knack, you know, of picking up points while our rivals falter. So the one thing I just want to talk about before we move on to a little bit of an Olympiacos preview is we put out now on our Twitter polls the very basic question, I guess, the million pound question now. Will Villa finish fourth or fifth? Now that fifth is locked up, will Villa finish fourth or fifth? From about 400 votes, 90.1% said that Villa will finish fourth at this point now. 9.9% at the last time of looking said that Villa will slip and finish fifth. I don't know where you stand, but I am, to be honest, I don't want to say I can't see a world in which Spurs make up the difference because PTSD from being a Villa fan and all that. But if Spurs finish above us at this point, I will be very surprised. staggered, actually, I would probably say, because I know they've got Sheffield United and Burnley in there, but apart, you know, their games are horrible.
Mm.
But, you know, City, Liverpool, Chelsea are their other three, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I was saying this about Man United a few weeks ago, like, I just can't see a world in which, you know, they make up the number of wins required on us. Even if Villa were to falter, I'm not sure Spurs have got the stones for it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Where do you sit on that? What do you think? Do you think fourth is, it's obviously not in the bag, but looking good?
Yeah, well, I think we've been asking pretty much every week since I think the Man United home defeats about where Villa will finish. And my answer, I don't think, has changed once, and that is fourth. I've maintained.
You have to be. I remember, yeah, you have to be fair.
Yeah. Like, I've always maintained we would. I knew there's obviously going to be sort of twists and turns. You know, it's never going to be easy. And you look at how we threw the lead away against Brentford. And I think Tottenham won Sunday that weekend to go above us on goal difference. But even then, I was still, you know, looking at their fixtures and thinking, well, they've got to go away to Newcastle next week. Well, that's going to be difficult. And I think that weekend was a pivotal one when they got pumped 4-0 at Newcastle and then we go and beat Arsenal the next day. I think that was a big one. I can't see them winning enough games and us losing the amount of games that we'd have to for them to overtake us. You know, I think I saw something earlier. I think it might have been John Townley tweeted out that four more points for us puts us on to 71. For Tottenham to overtake that, they'd have to win four of their last five games.
Yeah, and I mean, they're just not going to, are they?
No, they've got Chelsea away on Thursday, which, you know, for as poor as Chelsea have been, I think Tottenham have got a horrific record there.
Mm.
And then they go away to Anfield on the weekend. And yeah, then I think they've got Burnley at home, Man City home, and then Sheffield United away the last game of the season. But I'm kind of looking now, thinking even that Burnley, like Tottenham at home to Burnley, you're expecting Tottenham to win that game. But I think Burnley have gone about 6 or 7 unbeaten now. They've given themselves a real chance of staying up. Like it wouldn't, I'd be more shocked at, say, Villa not picking up a victory at either Brighton or Palace than I would be if Burnley went and got a result, whether that be a win or a draw at Tottenham.
It's that cliche, isn't it? Of like, you do not want to be playing these scrappers when their backs are against the wall, right?
100%. You look at our fixtures now, Brighton away, Liverpool home, Crystal Palace away. We're playing three teams that have got nothing to play for.
Yeah.
Like Liverpool are out the title race now. Their players look like they've kind of down tools a bit as well. You know, Brighton, I can't remember. I saw something good. I don't know if it was you who tweeted it or if I saw something else. But I think before we beat them 6-1 back at the start of the season, they'd won like 5 of their opening 6 or 7 games of the season. Yeah. And since we beat them, they've only won 5 of the next 28. Like, Brighton have had a poor season.
They have had a really poor season, haven't they?
And we've got a good record against them. And like, as I'm saying this, I've been a PTSD thinking you're upsetting the football gods. Stop tempting them.
Yeah, that voice never goes away.
It doesn't, but and we were kind of talking about this in the pub after the game yesterday. I was trying to say to lads, like, this isn't that Aston Villa. Like, this isn't new, like, Emery Aston Villa. I just think the only thing that I think will derail us is if, and God forbid this isn't the case, is if, say, like, Martinez or Tielemans are not available for us. Like, I don't think we can afford any more of these players not being available. But I have so much more faith in us than I do in Tottenham to get results. As we said earlier, I don't know if this was pre-recording or not, but when we've been poor this year, games where we've not played well, we've either got a point or managed to get a win out of it. When Tottenham have been poor this season, they've lost. They haven't got that in them. And yeah. The thing is now, it's in our own hands. Just, their games in hand are irrelevant now because you've got 7 points from them. You could argue 8 with a 6 better goal difference. I think they have to win at Chelsea and win at Liverpool in their next 2 games. If they don't, I think if they lose both of them, or say if they only take 1 or 2 points in those 2 games, I think it's as good as done.
That's the thing. Like, I can see Spurs picking up maybe like an unexpected win along the way, but I can't see them picking up like two or three of them, you know. And you're right. It's something I'd overlooked about our opponents is that they're on the beach, right? So yeah, I mean, I to be honest, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that I'm saying the words as Villa are sat in fourth heading into May. I think we're gonna do it. You know, I think we're
yeah.
But I do now, and I'm not like you. I remember you saying from very early in this season that you thought that we'd get fourth from as soon as it became apparent we were actually in the race. I have genuinely never believed it until I think you're right. That pivotal weekend when we won at Arsenal and Spurs lost, got hammered by Newcastle. That was the moment for me where I thought, you know, I don't think this is O'Neill 2.0. You know, I think this is actually, we could get over the line here. It's a scary feeling, of course, gotta be honest. But there you go. And then among all of this, before we run too long, European semi-final starts on Thursday. Like, what is going on? Do you know what I mean? we'd be remiss not to talk about that. Obviously, we'll, you know, the next few days are going to fly by. You've got to hope. I'm not convinced about Yuri Tielemans' condition after that. He didn't look too happy. At least the Emi Martinez injury, we don't have to worry about it for Thursday because we know where we stand with Olsen in goal anyway. It was interesting, the Lille tie. It felt a bit weird for whatever reason to play the away leg, have the away leg as the second leg. I feel like that just felt, I don't know, that felt particularly unusual, I suppose, because previous, you know, in previous rounds we were. But I've been trying to work out whether I think it's an advantage to start at home against Olympiacos or whether I think it's a hindrance. I can't really wrap my head around it. All I will say is I do think, you know, notwithstanding the fact that I have to be honest, I do think that Villa looked knackered. I thought Villa looked really tired against Chelsea. I think we are running on fumes at this point with the finish line in sight. If we can sort of get past that or whatever, I'd have to say, you know, I do Olympiacos over two legs. You'd like to think we'll win it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, it's just trying. Like, I agree with you what you said there, that I thought we looked really tired. But it's hard because we'd had the week off, and when you go back to the previous week, when the Thursday night we have extra time and penalties against Lille, and I thought we looked out on, you know, dead on our feet at the end of that, and then 3 days later against Bournemouth, like it was unbelievable.
The energy in that.
I think, and we've said this, I think you and me have made this point a few times. We are better, I think, with that regular run of games.
Yeah.
And like you look at the kind of mid-season, you know, the dip in form that we had this season was January, February.
When things go quiet, football. Yeah.
Like, it's really strange. So in a weird way, I think it does suit us, but that's, you know, we've got the manager who last season quite often said, I prefer to have constant run of games. You know, that's why he loves European football, because you have that, you know, that sort of momentum and adrenaline that sort of gets you through them. I think, obviously, it's going to be a tough game. You get to a semi-final of the European competition, it's not going to be easy. I'm personally glad that it's Olympiacos rather than Fenerbahce. I think that would have been a much trickier tie, especially with the second leg being away. Like, I mean, to be honest, Olympiacos, it will be a hell of an atmosphere there. Like, the one thing I've been to a few of the away games now, the atmosphere is that English football grounds compared to in Europe, it is terrible. Like, there's no comparison. They, you know, Warsaw and Lille, incredible atmospheres to play in. But I think the players, you know, you look at that first game against Warsaw, to me, it looked like the players were a bit overawed by it. But they've got used to that now. You know, they're playing in a big stadium with a, you know, big fiery atmosphere. I think if we can take a two-goal lead from Thursday to Olympiacos, then I think we'll have enough to see it through, because I do think we are a better team than that. Like, I'm going to hold my hands up. My my knowledge of Greek football isn't what it could be. Like, I don't really know anything about them.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would begrudge you that.
Yeah, but I'm just going on the assumption that we've got some excellent footballers in our squad. I'd like to see mean that we are the better team. It's just hoping that they do it on the night, and I think they will. I think you look at our home games in Europe, especially. The atmosphere has been great. We've played well in pretty much all of the home games we've had. Bring a chance to get to a final. It's unbelievable.
It's unreal, isn't it?
I'm really looking forward to it.
It is interesting because I was just looking at when you said you're far from an expert on Greek football. Me neither. So I had a little look at the Greek table, but I mean, they're only like the third or fourth best team in Greece this year, and like it's not to like demean them or anything. Like, it's going to be a really tough game, but I think what you said is pretty much spot on about that building a 2-goal lead. Like, obviously the I think the imperative thing. Obviously, we've got Olsen in goal, but you know, unlike Saturday against Chelsea. You know, we know we've got Olsen in goal.
Mm.
So under Emery on the training ground all week leading up to Thursday, it's going to be drills with Robin Olsen and the back four that Emery is intending to play. Not, you know, fingers crossed we don't get any more injuries. But, you know, so he's going to have them on the training ground, isn't he? Like Olsen and the back four, and they're going to be working together. So like that, you know, what we were talking about earlier with the timing of releasing the ball or picking the option, like all that stuff is stuff that can, okay, it's a short turnaround, but can be worked on. Because it's not Olsen being thrown in mid-game unexpectedly, you know. But I think what we absolutely cannot, it's going to sound very simple, it's cutting edge analysis for you, but what we absolutely cannot afford to do is if we build a lead 2-0 up, you know, and 2-0 is the pertinent one, because not only Chelsea, we've just given that away, but like Lille, the first leg, that nearly cost us. That nearly cost us the entire competition conceding that goal right at the end of the first leg. You do not want to be... Because I would like to think we'll come out on the front foot, and I would like to think we'll impose ourselves, and we should have enough quality to, you know, score. Hopefully score more than once at the first leg. But I mean, if you let them in through a back door late in the game, and you give them that momentum swing to then have to go to Greece and that fiery atmosphere is going to be really something. So I think that's, you know, I'd like to see Villa put a few goals past Olympiakos in the first leg, obviously. But I think what I would say, you know, more important than that really is, you know, keep the door shut. Because then, you know, you've got Emi Martinez coming back for the second leg. And if there's one man in football who thrives on a fiery atmosphere with, you know, 50,000 fans screaming in his face, it is that man. So knowing that he's coming back for the second leg, you know, if we can just keep it tight first leg and go in with some form of advantage. You would like to think that we can get the business done. But I mean, I agree with you. And then between the two legs, it's Brighton, right? Is that the league game? Yeah. I think you're 100% right. And I mean, Emery said it himself as well. And it is, we have had this conversation, you and I, like we're definitely better when we're playing like every 3 or 4 days. I don't know what it is about Emery's management, or I suppose he's just used to it, right? And he's clearly figured out some kind of formula that works. But so I'm, you know, I think obviously Villa PTSD kicking in, there's a lot of stuff that could, there's plenty of stuff that could still go wrong. But this period, this Thursday, Sunday, Thursday period, I'm looking forward to, really, because I think that is when we have typically been our best this season. And it's just the opportunity is in front of us, right? There's an opportunity to make history right now. And whereas I think Villa teams in the past, even if they'd got to this kind of position, might have folded under the pressure. Mm. It's quite hard to imagine an Unai Emery team, I think, being overawed by the occasion. So, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic for the first leg, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, to be fair, over the years I've been going, other than the Bradford incidents, we've actually been reasonably good in semi-finals. You know, there's been a number of occasions that even in sort of the last 10, 15 years, like, you know, when, you know, during the from sort of, you know, 2010 to 2018, when we were like properly shit, we still, you know, we got to you got to the FA Cup semi final and played Liverpool off the park. Now, you know, the less said about the final that day, the better. But, and then you think both playoffs experiences that we had, we made the final both times. Like we're reasonably good, historically at you know, getting through semi finals and navigating them quite well. And we've got a manager now. He's won the Europa League four times. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if, speaking from a fan point of view, obviously you're saying, want to go to Olympiacos with a 2-goal lead. If we win 1-0, even if Thursday's 0-0, obviously I don't hope that that's the case, but even if it was 0-0, Emery will not be panicking whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like, he will know we're capable of going there. We've shown we're capable of going, up against great teams and beating them. I think you just got to be really optimistic and, it's about time that we won a trophy, let's be honest. The 1996, this is the last time that we won one. We've got to change that. And I've got a relatively good feeling that we will make it through to the final, and then and we can panic for a few weeks then and get nervous for a couple of weeks about that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to Thursday. I think it'll be a hell of an atmosphere. Just the whole context of everything, this is a semi-final of the European Cup competition, and we're on the brink of securing Champions League football for next season. I think it's just something to really look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's as good a place as any to leave it, really, unless you've got anything else, Si, because I think that's the main thing for me. Like, you get, as much as there are some in-game frustrations, like the Chelsea, letting that 2-goal lead slip, like, just the big picture. I've never known anything like this as a Villa fan. I know there's a whole generation, I'm about to turn 31. Didn't come from a Villa supporting household, so I tuned in a bit late, tuned in about the age of 7 or whatever, by choice rather than by birthright, But it's far and away the best season I've ever known. And it's not just about the league position and about the European Cup run. It's not just that. It's the feeling that you get from watching this team play. It's the fact that we're all in on Unai Emery, that we said. It's the fact that we've got this manager wants to be here, and we're still in. This is only really year one of the project, really.
Yeah.
If you count, year zero, I guess, when he came in and took over. There was never any way that he was going to, bail out after making progress at every stage. And so to know now that we, it's not done and dusted yet, obviously, but I've been saying for weeks, whatever happens from here on out, it's a season for ages. And just to go come full circle again, to go into May, fourth in the Premier League, 7 points ahead of fifth, European semi-final on tap, it's unbelievable. So if occasionally you give up a two-goal lead at home to a mid-table team, shit happens. We'll take that one on the chin and move on. Right, I think that's a good place to end. I mean, we've gone on for long enough, as we always do on this. Hopefully my first time in the hosting chair hasn't been too onerous for listeners. So I'm sure
you did a good job, Tom.
Thank you very much. I'm sure that Cole will be back next time. We should. I don't know. I'm saying this. Cole might be cursing me from home, but I assume we will try and do something at the very least, and it's a quick turnaround, isn't it? We'll certainly have something next weekend, if not sooner, I would imagine. But for now, I guess everyone listening at home, thanks for listening. If you want to follow Simon on Twitter, it's at Si O'Regan. If for some reason you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at TD Nightingale.
I can't say you're well worth a follow on Twitter. You put some really good stuff out, I think.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, it's easy. It's easy in seasons like this when things are so swimmingly, isn't it? Really. At Holtcast Pod is our the podcast Twitter account. Please drop us a, give us a like on whatever your platform is: Spotify, Apple Music. Keep listening, and above all, keep smiling. Keep enjoying this unbelievable Villa season, and we'll see what the next week brings.
Hey,
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.